This Father's Day at Lowe's, score free gifts for the greatest dad. Right now, get a free Blackstone 8-piece accessory kit when you buy a Blackstone 28-inch griddle. Plus, get two free select Craftsman V20 tools when you buy an RP brushless drill and impact driver combo kit. Shop these deals and more this Father's Day at Lowe's. We help, you save. Valid through 6/15 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
I'm Holly.
And I'm Bridget.
And this
is Girls Next Level. Welcome back to Girls Next Level, everybody. We're excited to be back.
Sort of back. I'm back, but not back.
I know. We're remote for the first part of this podcast. And we wanted to start it off because we're talking about the My Bear Lady episode this week. But we got some feedback from you guys. Like, some of you guys wanted us to talk about the Billboard Awards that we were part of back in 2006. And it just reminded me, it happened in December of 2006, right before we started filming season 3, which we've just started on. So I thought we'd kind of share like what we were doing in between seasons 2 and 3, which wasn't a very long time. It was just like a month. And in the beginning of December, we went to Vegas to do the Billboard Awards, and we were hired as like trophy girls. Like, we were the girls who walked out and like gave the trophies to the winners.
Yeah.
I found our schedule from that day, and it was a whirlwind, as things always were, because we went in one day to do this awards ceremony. But of course, we had to depart the mansion at 6:30 a.m. in order to get to Vegas and fly Southwest and get there in time for the rehearsal, which started at 11. And we were supposed to bring clothing options. I don't remember if I did or not.
I don't remember bringing options. I feel like I just knew what I was going to wear.
Yeah, I ended up wearing like a black and white Roberto Cavalli dress. I don't remember like bringing different options.
I think I wore leopard dress. And I think I borrowed it from Tiffany Fallon.
Yeah, it was cute. And then we did like the red carpet at 3, and the show taping was at 5. And I remember like meeting Fergie. She was super nice. Do you remember she did that Fergalicious performance and her whole set was like candy?
Yes.
That was super cute. And I remember meeting Courtney Love, and I loved her because I loved Hole when I was in high school. That was like the first concert I went to. And I remember going up to her and just giving her a big old hug, like I knew her and stuff. And she was super nice. And she like introduced us on stage. Do you remember anything else from that award ceremony?
So what I remember is we had this hotel room to like in between things and to get ready and all that kind of stuff. And we were back and forth. I remember that we had security with us, of course, and PR with us. And I remember when we went to rehearsal that there were, before the people get there, there are cutouts of their heads of who's going to be sitting where. Do you remember that? Like, there was like blow ups of like pictures of everybody's heads, and they were sitting in all the chairs. And we even had them too, even though I don't think we ever went and sat down in the audience, but we had chairs out there and our heads were on them. And I thought, oh my God, that's so crazy. So when you're doing your performance, or like when you're doing your rehearsal during the day, not just us, but like the actual performances, they can see like who's sitting where. So if you want, like if you're doing the performance and you want to engage with somebody in the audience, you know where they're going to be sitting while you're doing your rehearsal. So I thought that was really interesting.
I didn't realize that's why they had those. Cause like I would always see, you know, people post behind the scenes stuff like that. I didn't realize that was why that was the purpose.
Well, I don't know if that's the only reason, but I feel like that's definitely one of the reasons, but there may be other reasons why they do that too. And then I was, do you remember we had to switch back and forth from which side of the stage that we were on and we're like, which way we would walk out. And I remember I was standing there and they're like, okay, so we have Stevie Wonder up next. You have to hold his hand and walk him out there though. And I was like, I felt like such pressure, like to walk somebody blind out there. I was like, wait, am I qualified for this?
And so you have a legend in your hands.
I know. I mean, his I don't know if it was his handler, his PR person, his manager, or just like a friend or whatever, who normally does all that kind of stuff, was like right off stage. But like, he didn't go on stage with me. So when he was backstage, I had to like walk him out. And I just felt like very responsible at the moment.
Oh, but totally.
But I've held Stevie Wonder's hand because of it.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah. And then I just remember also before we left, they were like, oh, girls, you have to get your gift baskets at the gifting suite. And I remember going back there and it was a huge room and they literally walk you through and they had all this stuff they were trying to give us.
Yeah. And you know what's weird is I don't remember taking any of it. Am I crazy? Because I remember they had stuff like Hello Kitty guitars.
They gave us the Hello Kitty guitars, but we were like, we have to like catch a Southwest flight in like a few minutes. They mailed things to us later, but we definitely got the Hello Kitty guitars. I remember that they gave me like this little pair of like ruby earrings with a matching necklace or something that I gave my mom.
That makes sense. Yeah.
And there were a ton of other things too. I just don't remember what they all were, but I was like, whoa. But it was like the gifting suite for like all the performers when they were done. And never, ever, ever occurred to me that we were going to be included in anything like that.
And then it says on our schedule after the show that there was an after party at Studio 54. Did we go to that?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either, because we had to leave Vegas at 9.
Yeah.
So we got back a little past curfew. We were given a little grace, but still, like, we couldn't stay overnight or anything. And my most memorable thing from that day is
I know what you're gonna say.
I don't remember if it was the red carpet to the hotel room or the show to the hotel room, but when we left, a mob of people chased us through the casino and we got into the elevator and our PR guy had to like block the elevator door until it closed. And that was like the first time I ever felt famous. It was like Beatlemania. It was bizarre.
Yes, I was going to say that too. My biggest memory from that time was just being completely mobbed on the casino floor. I mean, it was exciting and it was fun, but it was a little bit like chaotic and way out of control. And I think we only had Joe Piastro from security with us and Rob Hailberger from PR. And I remember they were like really frantic, like very, very worried. And then do you remember they got us all into the elevator and then Kendra walked out back into the mall because she was just like eating it up so much. And Joe was like getting really freaked out that she wouldn't get back in the elevator because he couldn't control what was happening.
Yeah.
And she was like being all like into it and everything. And which obviously we wanted to do too, but it was creating like a problem. And
yeah, it was kind of scary for a minute.
And Joe was very stressed about it.
Yeah, that was a crazy moment.
But it's funny because that was one of my one of the most vivid memories of doing the Billboard Awards. And I feel like that's exactly the moment that we realized, oh, people know who we are.
Yeah. And it was definitely because like we've said before, like, you know, there would be crowds and stuff, but we were always with Hef. So we always just felt like it was the same thing. Well, Hef's famous and we're just kind of here. And maybe every once in a while, somebody would know one of our names or want to talk to one of us, but it was rare. And I feel like there's something too about being on TV for that length of time. Like sometimes shows will come out and be like a breakout mainstream hit, but sometimes you kind of have to like prove your relevancy before anybody wants to like accept you really or acknowledge you. And we were going into our season 3. We'd already been on TV for 2 seasons. And I felt like season 3 was a real turning point for us as far as like us being recognized and people knowing our names and things like that.
Mm-hmm, for sure. And that was the moment. That right there was the moment.
Yeah, 100%.
We were in the elevator and we were like, holy shit. That was crazy.
Yeah, it was nuts. Another thing I wanted to talk about before we get started is when we're talking about this episode, we're telling a story about somebody who wasn't very friendly. And I'm scared to tell the story because I'm just kind of going through this phase where I have FOPO, the fear of people's opinions.
Yes.
And I just am super questioning, like, why am I even sharing this story? Because it's not like a beef thing, and it's not like I want to out this person because it's kind of like a dumb thing. But I feel like the reason it's interesting and the reason I want to share it, other than the fact that I feel like I do kind of have this urge to share any and every detail that I think the audience will be interested in, as long as it's not like an egregious breach of someone's privacy. But I feel like the real interesting thing about this story is just like how differently I perceive the behavior now, not just from her, but from anybody who does this, based on how I perceived it in my 20s. Because back in my 20s, if somebody was really rude or standoffish to me, especially consistently, I assumed it was a major problem, like they really hated me or that they were the world's biggest asshole or something. And I just don't really perceive it like that anymore. And I feel like part of that is just like my own journey with like discovering I'm neurodivergent and like recognizing my own behaviors and like what's behind that. And it kind of affects how I see other people's behaviors a little bit differently. For example, like yesterday, I was introduced to a girl and I felt like she was kind of rude. But like if that would have happened to me in my 20s, I would have been like, oh, what a bitch. She must have a problem with me or something. And now I just kind of see it like, oh, she's really insecure. And not in a condescending way, like, ew, you're insecure. But like, I've been there. Like I either feel like that person's having a really bad day or they're just really insecure. Whereas before in my 20s, I would have been like, fuck, what's this all about? Like, why do you have a problem with me? Or why are you an asshole? You know?
Yeah.
So yeah, I just feel like it's interesting.
Right. Are you referring to Mo?
No, Pamela.
Oh, the Pamela thing. Oh, shit.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Like, I worry too, because I feel like people set certain people on pedestals and they don't really know the person. And yeah. And if anybody says anything that doesn't match this like icon status that they have somebody at, then they automatically hate the messenger.
Totally. Like on our Patreon, we reviewed a documentary about Anna Nicole, and the documentary was just kind of weird and we had questions about it. But I'm a huge Anna Nicole fan. Like she's like the whole reason I wanted to be in Playboy, basically. And I've said multiple times that I've met her and she was super, super nice.
Yeah.
Really polite. But for some reason, people, not everybody, but like a few people really were offended that we were like talking about that documentary. And I don't block people from the Patreon, except that one time there were two people I blocked because the comments they left were so horrible and just fucking mean. And I was just like, what prompted this? Damn. And we weren't even saying anything bad about Anna Nicole. It was just like this documentary was kind of weird.
Yeah, totally.
But they interpreted it like we were and they flipped the fuck out.
Yeah. So people want to know like how, you know, the people that we've met and how they were in real life and stuff. And then, but then I feel like we have to be really guarded about what we say because people take it so offensively. If it wasn't a positive experience.
Totally, 100%.
Yeah, so it was tough to decide whether we should even mention it or not, but it just seemed like we have to, like, it's right here in front of us.
Totally, and I'm trying to get over my FOPO, fear of other people's opinions.
So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and again, like, it's not beef, and it's not like I'm not a fan of hers or wouldn't be excited to see her if I saw her tomorrow, but I'm just talking about this moment in time, you know, from this episode.
Yeah.
So should we get into the episode?
Yes, let's get to it.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra durable pocket hose copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Host. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethost.com/terms.
And we are back with an episode that's very near and dear to my heart. It's called My Bear Lady. And before we get into it, Bridget, I wanted to ask you what your overall initial takeaway was when you rewatched this, because you said something interesting to me that I think sets a tone for this episode.
Yeah, I wasn't that excited rewatching this one. Like, I felt, at least for me, but I saw it in kind of all of us and stuff, that they wanted me to look like I didn't deserve what I was going for.
Like looking unqualified, kind of?
Yes. And like, and I'll point out specific things in here, but they were definitely like acting like we're just gonna like fake this for her or something like that. And I don't appreciate that. And I'll get into it more. Yeah. But like, I have a master's degree in communications. Mm-hmm. Like, I've been doing hosting for a long time at the mansion and for other things and stuff. And so to make me look completely unqualified and like, we'll fix it in post and saying things like that, I just feel like it's such a slap in the face and underhanded. And I don't like it. And I also felt like they were setting you up to fail or trying to or whatever, that you're just skating around the office and you're not taking this seriously and you don't have questions and stuff. And I don't like it looking back on it.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And when you said that, it reminded me of something that one of the people from the network, who's one of the people I really liked, except for this one comment, at one point, I think it was later on in the series than this episode, like I think I'd been working at the studio for a while, but they told Kevin that he did such a great job making me look competent at my job.
See, it's that kind of stuff. Like,
and that pisses me the fuck off, because I really fucking did that job.
It should piss you off. Just like it pisses me off that they try to make me look like I don't know what I'm doing, or that I'm fumbling around, or that they, you know, can't get anything to make a demo reel or whatever, when I have tons of shit and I literally went to school for this.
Yeah, it's crazy. So getting back to this episode, it originally aired on April 1st, 2007.
April Fool's Day.
Oh, right. Making us look like fools.
Uh-huh.
The top song was Don't Matter by Akon. The top movie was Blades of Glory. And this episode is a Frankenstein episode.
Yes.
What is a Frankenstein episode, you may ask? A Frankenstein episode was Kevin's term for an episode where the three of us girls are all off doing something completely different, and it's all cut and pasted together, but there is a common theme that brings us all together. And this is a career episode, kind of like Career Dazed wanted to be a career episode, but really wasn't. And yeah, it's definitely more of a career episode than that. We're all kind of doing something like career or future related.
Right.
And the cold open is we arrive at the Playboy Legacy Collection event.
This is a weird cold open, too, because they always like to start at the mansion, and immediately it's the limo pulling up to a red carpet event. So I was like, already right off the bat, I was like, whoa, what's happening here? Because it was a thing Kevin liked to do, start at the mansion and end at the mansion. So the fact that we're starting this episode somewhere else is kind of shocking.
It's jarring, and it's weird, too, because it's so out of order. And I know continuity is for pussies on this show, as Kevin liked to say, but it's extra weird because it's such a loop, because what they're showing us doing is what we're leaving for at the end of this very episode. It's so strange.
Yes.
Because as I'm watching this, I'm like, we're seeing Tamara, the playmate I'm working with at the studio, get out of the limo with us. And I'm like, that's a fail, because you see me kind of discovering her later or bringing her into the fold later. And all they had to do was not show her at that event, like just cut her out.
Yeah.
But for some reason, they kept it in, because I think the reason they decided to use this as the cold open is the Playboy Legacy Collection. It was some kind of auction of like the original photographs or something like that.
Yeah.
And we were going to like the party for that. And I think they just wanted to show what a legacy Playboy is, and the art and the photography behind Playboy, and why it's a big deal and why I would be excited to work there.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
Yeah. And
The location for this event is at a club called, or used to be called, Bliss. And the reason I want to bring that up is because there's a scene, and I don't even know why they would have left this in, because nobody watching like knows or cares. But I tell Hef, this is Bliss, honey, because I think he said something like, this looks just like Bliss or something. And I said, it is Bliss, honey. And he says, oh, I know it is. And Bliss was the name of the venue.
Do you think whoever was editing thought, oh, this is such an amazing night. This is Bliss.
Yes.
Like you're saying something really romantic.
I think that's why it was left in.
That's funny.
That's what they think, or at least that's what they were hoping the audience would think. I'm talking about, this is just Bliss. Look at all this glamorous Playboy stuff. Nothing to do with that. That's literally the name of the club. It used to be called that. It wasn't even called that anymore.
Yeah.
And do you remember that macaroni and cheese we used to get there?
Yeah, it was real good.
It made me want that. Like I could taste it while I was watching this.
I mean, I could taste it right now. And the funny thing is they show a chair that Bliss had custom made for Hef. There was a booth,
like a throne.
It was like built around this red chair with like a Playboy bunny on it. It was so funny because they loved having him there. And then...
But in interview, I say, seeing how much Hef has done, how much he's accomplished, and how he's followed his dreams inspires me to follow my dreams, too. And that is true. Like,
yeah, that's
when
a good tie-in.
I would see all of these things that Hef would, you know, accomplish or Playboy would accomplish or whatever, it would really make me excited, too, to feel like, you know, I can do this, too. Maybe not
100%. 100%.
The other reason they picked this scene to be the cold open.
Because Pamela Anderson shows up.
Yes.
And I don't know if I'm going to leave this in the main podcast or just for Patreon. We'll see. But interacting with Pam in the beginning was a little awkward. And this is not beef, you guys. I don't care. Like, I'm a fan of hers. I'm excited to see her new movie. But oftentimes when I'm just talking about mansion experiences, I'll talk about meeting people like Paris Hilton and how she was so nice and how she would talk to each of us girls like we were equals. And not everybody was that nice. And people always want to know who wasn't that nice, Holly. And I never say, because I know a lot of our listeners are such huge Playboy fans and such huge fans of this person. And it's not that Pam wasn't nice. It was just that she would do this weird thing where she'd always come up to Hef wherever she would run into him. Sometimes she would come to Easter, sometimes at a nightclub, sometimes show up to an event like this, or sometimes at a party at the mansion. And she'd like fawn all over him. And then he's surrounded by all these girls. And it's not like I'm not expecting her to like drop everything and ask my name and start a huge convo. Like, that's not it at all. But usually when you come up to somebody and they're surrounded by all these people, you kind of like nod or wave or say hi, or she would act like we did not exist on any level in such a weird way. And I say in commentary that Pam's butt was right in front of my face and she has no cellulite. And her ass was right in my face. Like, it was just like, no,
like we didn't exist.
Yeah. And it was so strange to me. And the only reason I'm bringing this up is I remember feeling like it was so strange that I wondered, what is that all about? And I still kind of wonder, because it would change later on. Like, she would acknowledge me a little bit toward the very end, like on the episode where she like brings out the cake naked, like she gives me a big hug. And like, I remember there was one night, I think it was in that same episode, where her and Steve Bing came over and Steve Bing was like, oh, thank you so much for like taking care of him, meaning Hef. And Pam kind of nodded along. So there was like some like, hi, I see there's a person standing in front of me.
Later on.
But in the beginning, it was so distinct. And nobody else was like that. Like Jenny McCarthy.
So nice.
Carmen Electra. Like, you would think we paid for personal meet and greets from them. They were so fucking nice.
Right.
But for some reason, Pam acted like we weren't there. And at the time, I assumed she must be really close with Hef's ex-wife. I'm like, oh, she must be like super close with Kim. And she's so Team Kim that she's like anti-Hef having girlfriends. Because from my perspective, I was in my early 20s. So I thought, oh, she's ignoring us. She must be Team Kimberly and must just hate it that Hef has girlfriends. That's like how my immature mind was like interpreting it.
Mm-hmm.
Or I don't know, maybe she was at such a weird level of fame where people always wanted something from her that she didn't feel comfortable talking to people. Or maybe she'd had an experience where she tried to talk to Hef's girlfriends before and it went really poorly. I don't know what it was, but it was so distinct and weird. I remember back then like wondering, what is this? Like, why is she like this? I don't get it.
Yeah. I thought it was weird, too, that she completely ignored us and but yet fawned so heavily over Hef when his girlfriends are literally sitting right there. And I know she doesn't give a shit. And honestly, I didn't either. Like, I didn't care that she was
just like
it.
Fawning over him. Like, we're not like jealous.
No, I'm not jealous of it. But don't you think it's kind of weird to do that when it's somebody's boyfriend and the girlfriends are sitting right there?
I do think it's weird. Yeah.
like in any other situation.
Oh, 100%.
Like if somebody came up and like a high school friend came up and was like fawning all over Nick while I was just sitting there and just didn't even acknowledge me or something.
And yeah,
like there would be a problem.
Yeah, I guess when people act like that, they just assume we're all just there strictly for the money and don't give a fuck. And but that wasn't the case with us.
Right.
So, yeah, it was weird.
Yeah.
But honestly, this is something I don't even know. Like you might, Patreon people might be the only one hearing it because I know that people will hate that I said that.
I know, but what are we supposed to do? Not say the truth? Like act like everything was hunky-dory and that
everything
she was like
so great,
super friendly to us when she wasn't?
Yeah, like, and it was extreme.
Yeah, because it was night and day, like how Jenny McCarthy or Carmen Electra or like you said, Paris
Hilton,
Nicole
Smith,
yeah,
anybody.
They were all very, very nice and friendly and welcoming and acknowledged us.
Mm-hmm. Look, I'm the most socially awkward person on the planet. I'm sure there's a million people, especially from pre-2004 mansion era, who would love to come forward and say what a fucking bitch I am. So, like, I get it, but also I don't, because it was so extreme and so every single time.
Yeah.
And again, it's not beef. Like, if I saw her tomorrow, I wouldn't be like, fuck you, or right. anything like that. But it was just, I'm honest to God curious what was behind it. Like, that's the only reason I bring it up. Like, was she friends with Kimberly? Was it awkward for some reason? Did she have a bad experience with like the original seven girlfriends? Like, what was it?
Right.
Interesting.
Then Tiffany Fallon gets up on the stage to introduce Hef, and she says something that I think I thought was just funny at the time, uh-huh. but now I'm sort of like cringe about it because she says, I would like to just say a few words, although Playboy never hired me to talk. And I don't know, that just like, I think I thought it was funny back then,
yeah.
but now I look at it and I'm just like, ew, does she really feel that way? Or is she just being funny?
I'm so curious. I'd like to know, because I do think she was being funny and I do think it's true to a point. But also in another weird way, it's not true because I do remember them being so excited about Tiffany, not just for the way she looked, but because she was at, I think, maybe 25 at the time she became a Playmate, a little more mature than a lot of the girls who were trying out for Playmate. And she was very articulate and they knew she would be a great representative for Playmate of the Year. So it's not completely true. Like, I do know they valued her ability to represent herself.
Yeah.
But in a bigger picture, yeah, you're kind of only valued for your youth and your looks.
Right.
So and I'm curious how she felt.
Like I love Tiffany and I'm not like bashing her for saying that or anything like that. Like I genuinely thought it was funny at the time and I still see the humor in it, but I think it bothers me because I want to know, did she really feel that way?
Yeah.
Because that's the part that icks me, if she really felt that way. And I know you're getting naked in a magazine. Like, that's what they hired you for. But I don't know.
Yeah.
There's obviously more value to people than that. And especially when you're Playmate of the Year and stuff. So I'm like, oh, I hope she didn't really feel that way.
After Tiffany speaks, I did think it was nice when Hef got up there that he acknowledged that his girls were there.
Oh.
He could have called us out by name. There was only three of us girlfriends.
But, yeah.
But I did think it was nice that he acknowledged, oh, and my girls are here. And I thought that was nice of him because it's not something he would typically do. And I think he did it because he was about to talk about Pamela and just wanted to like throw us a bone. But I feel like that was nice of him and not his usual thing up to that point. Like, I feel like for my first bunch of years in that relationship, he just would have been like, oh, Pamela's here and fuck you guys. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, this is a very cringe scene for me. And it really set me off for some reason.
Uh-huh.
Because I know that it's been happening to me this whole series. But this time, I was so fucking pissed when I watched it. But they show me Hef's giving up doing his speech and they show me eating and it's horrible lighting. So it's like I got these big old bags and I'm like eating and it looks like I'm doing it all in the dark, like off by myself, like I'm closet eating or something. And I'm so fucking sick of this. Like, I am about ready to wring somebody's neck.
Well, you say something about it in commentary too. So this isn't even like a hindsight thing. Like, this was bothering you back then.
Yes.
And for good reason.
Like, I know I go on and on about it, but like every time I see, and this time for some reason really got to me. Like, I'm just like wanting to throw something at the TV and be like, I'm so fucking tired of this.
Yeah.
And for people who think it didn't affect me my whole life, it has. And people do still think I'm the fat girl.
Yeah.
Because of this.
Yeah.
Because of this.
It's crazy how deliberate it was. because it's deliberate. Like, you're editing a scene and you're making a point of cutting back, and you could have cut back to anything.
Right.
Any
moment. Everybody was eating the little appetizers that was going around.
Somebody cheersing. Like, there's so many things you could have cut back to that would have made more sense than that.
Yeah. And I think I just thought, because obviously I haven't watched these back in so long, I think I just thought that a lot of that eating stuff was leading up to the workout episode. Uh-huh. And that after that, I was kind of home free. But if anything, I feel like it's gotten worse.
Yeah.
I feel like that workout episode really inspired them with the idea to take that further.
Yeah. Well, they use food clips from the workout thing later in this episode.
I know.
It's ridiculous. So after the cold open, they cut to the mansion. There's some jolly music playing, and I'm in the med room wearing my OG Club 33 sweatshirt. You can see the old logo on it. And I am using a paper cutter. Does anyone even know what that is anymore?
Okay, wait. Yes, I do. But I have a couple things to say, too. Did you notice, just back to the Pam thing, yeah, really quick, that Alexis Vogel was sitting there, too?
Yes, Alexis Vogel, who did Pam's makeup. She did pretty much all the Playmates makeup for Playboy in the 90s and really, like, created a certain style of makeup. Like, the only reason I know how to do makeup, don't judge by today because I'm running late over here, but is because of the Alexis Vogel kits.
Yeah, she had her own makeup line.
Mm-hmm.
And she passed away, right?
She did, yeah. I never had my makeup done with her, though, because by the time we moved in there, she was so expensive.
Yeah, I think I remember you telling me that.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, now the paper cutter thing. So I had a paper cutter, too, in my room. It's the hardest thing to store. Like, I remember it took up, like, a whole cut. Like, I was always looking for, like, a place to put it, because it's this huge, heavy thing with, like, a scissor on it. Yeah, like, I remember always, like, I couldn't be without it because you need it for scrapbooking and you need it for, like, crafts and things like that. But I remember always thinking, God, where am I going to put this thing?
Yeah, I'm sure anybody out there who does Etsy or whatever probably knows what a paper cutter is. But I'm like, do people still use those?
How else would you do it besides scissors, which doesn't get a very straight, clean shot?
Yeah, I used to use those all the time in high school in, like, yearbook class and journalism class and stuff like that. And I'm using it because I'm doing a sample layout of Tamara's pictorial, which again is another totally out of order thing because they don't really focus in and show that it's Tamara. But according to the timeline of this episode, we haven't even shot her yet. So how do I have the photos to make this layout?
But yeah, I was wondering too. I was like, is she just doing like a fake one or something?
No. Like, it was from after.
Yeah. And we get a cameo from Dickie walks in.
Dickie's fan.
He's nosy and has to know what you're working on.
What are we doing? But you can see his face light up because he sees the nudes.
Oh.
Like, he wants to see what's happening.
Well, know what's funny? He messaged me and he was like, you girls must have been talking about that scene where I let you borrow my gun and holster recently because some Facebook or something, he saw messages or something. He's like, I forgot all about that. That was pretty funny. And he was
so
into it.
And I say in my confessional that I had an interest in journalism since high school, which is true because I was in the newspaper and yearbook staff. And it's just such a trip to me to think about how young we were and how young the Playmates were and how lots of times when Playmates would come in and fill out their data sheets, they'd ask about hobbies and they'd still be listing like their high school activities because they were like that fresh out of high school.
Yeah.
And how for me, even though I came to the mansion from college, it's still like kind of the last chapter. Like, oh, I've always been interested in journalism since high school. And I don't know, maybe to the audience, it comes off as like a very way back when kind of thing. But I watch it now and I'm like, well, of course that was fresh in my mind because it wasn't that many. It was only a handful of years ago.
Yeah. I'm curious because you say, you tell Dickie, I'm trying to set up a West Coast art department. Can you kind of tell people what an art department is and why it was there wasn't one in the West Coast?
Yeah, the art department would do like the layouts and things like that for the magazine. And Playboy started in Chicago, so that's where most of the offices were. But then when Hef decided to be out in LA full time, they moved the photo studio out there. And then other things too, like Playboy TV would be out there in like a whole separate office and things like that. But for the most part, like a lot was still in Chicago. And I feel like that was probably a lot of the reason, not the only reason, but some of the reason Playboy was still bleeding money is they still were kind of scattered all over the place and could have stood to consolidate a lot sooner. And I know that's tricky because when you're running a business, it's a lot of people's jobs and that matters. So I know it's not such a easy cut and dry thing to do. But I really thought that since we're shooting all the stuff out here, why is not the whole art department here? Like,
the way it would work before I came in was we would send everything off to Chicago. They would look at the pictures, send it back to Hef for approval, send it back. They do like weird retouching in Chicago. And the photographers are always like, what the fuck is this? This isn't even like what it was supposed to look like. And it just was really expensive and slow and time consuming. And I'm just like, why are we just not doing the layouts out here?
Yeah.
And it just seemed like, you know, in the opinion of everybody who was on the creative end, like with the photography, it seemed like some of the best stuff we were shooting was never even getting published because some middleman out there didn't think it was good or didn't think it was, you know, cookie cutter enough.
Yeah.
Like I've said before, like anytime we would shoot something awesome, Steve would turn around to me and go, it'll never get published. We should look Steve up and see if he wants to come share a story or two.
Yeah, that would be fun.
He's so funny.
So like the art department, it actually like, it's kind of like scrapbooking. Like you take things and you like, you do the whole page layout, yeah. Right?
So I was serious. It never happened. But I thought like the art department, like, why is it just not in California and we can just all be here doing it?
Yeah. So you're finally excited. Or you're excited because you're finally getting a chance to apprentice with Marilyn.
Mm-hmm.
And you say she's a perfectionist.
Yes. I walk into the studio. I say hi to Barbara, the receptionist. And I'm carrying the most giant fucking bag I've ever seen in my life. Like, I know big bags were a thing back then. I used to carry, like, giant bags even out to nightclubs or whatever. But it is the biggest bag I've ever seen anyone carry. I'm talking about Marilyn being a perfectionist, and they're going back to some of the footage of when she was picking on you for our second cover shoot. So we see just what a perfectionist she is.
You say you're nervous to see her, and I'm curious why you were nervous.
I was nervous to see her because she has such a formidable reputation of being just like the Miranda Priestly of Playboy. Like, she's kind of a scary character. And she was one, circling back to the Pam thing, who she wasn't unfriendly when we would see her at the mansion. Like, she would acknowledge a human being if she saw a human being and say hi. But she wasn't overly friendly either. And that was because she was friends with Kimberly, Hef's ex-wife, and very loyal to Kimberly. And, you know, there would be times when she had to produce playmate shoots of Hef's girlfriends and our shoots. But I remember, you know, she didn't show up to a lot of our first pictorial. And even at the time, I wondered, oh, is this loyalty to Kimberly?
But then when she did, we were glad she didn't in the beginning.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I totally get why you would be nervous. I just wanted to hear what you had to say.
But to my surprise, she was actually so fucking welcoming.
It seems like it.
And when I was there. But another twist to this story is she retired and I took over that job. And, you know, I just went skipping down the rest of my life thinking, wow, Marilyn was so welcoming to me when she didn't need to be and stuff. And then recently I went to go take part in a documentary that somebody was making about Arnie Freitag, one of the studio photographers. And they said that they had interviewed Marilyn. And I said, oh, I can't get a hold of her. We'd love her to come on the podcast. And he goes, well, she didn't have nice things to say about you. And I just want to preface this with, this is hearsay. Like, for all, I don't know this director very well. For all I know, he could be hearing something and interpreting it one way. And maybe if I heard Marilyn say it, I wouldn't think the same thing.
Yeah.
So it's secondhand, but still. He was like, oh, she didn't have nice things to say about you. I go, really? I go, what did she say? And he goes, well, she said the whole reason she was pushed out was because of you. I go, that's ridiculous. She was fully planning on retiring already. Yeah. Like, when I went in to do this internship, at first I thought it was just going to be for one episode and I would have loved to do more, but I didn't really know. But even right around this time, there was already the chatter that Marilyn was retiring and she was talking about how she was moving to La Costa. It was like detailed. And eventually when she was, you know, very soon after this, within the next few months, it was like she was retiring. And I was like, I want to take over, not the celebrity pictorials, but I really want to do the playmate pictorials. And Hef loved that idea because, as you'll see later in this episode, you know, he gets more involved in the process. And it was just a really efficient way of doing things. And I thought everything was fine and she left on good terms. But apparently I pushed her out.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated anytime somebody thinks I had a lot more power than I did.
It's interesting because watching this back, like, I remember that she was leaving too at that time when you were kind of stepping in. And so it was really interesting for me to watch this back because I also heard, you know, what you heard, what she said at the interview, supposedly. And I'm watching how welcoming she is. And she calls you our new producer. And she says really nice things about you. Then I'm thinking, was she just faking that for the cameras or for
I mean, maybe part of it was like she wanted a redemption arc because the episode had already aired where she's picking on you. And maybe that got a reaction and she's like, oh, shit, I really need to make a different impression. This is a chance to redeem myself.
Yeah.
So maybe, but I don't know. Like, I always watch this and I thought, oh, you know, she was great. You know, she was ready to retire and stuff. But now that I hear that she supposedly said that, I'm watching it again. And I'm like, was she only being nice because she thought I was going to be there for that one day and flop? I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a mystery.
And then Steve Wada walks in, obviously one of the top photographers at the studio, him and Arnie.
We also see in Marilyn's office, she has this big, like, rusty pink marble desk.
Yeah.
I inherited that desk, but I didn't get the office. It went to, like, a smaller office. And I remember at the time dreaming about Marilyn's office being turned into a Starbucks so we could, like, have our own.
That's funny.
So we say hi to Steve Wada, and we've met him before on the show. I believe in season 1, episode 2, he's shooting Raquel's test shoot. And there's pictures of Sharon Stone on the wall behind us. And I remember reading an interview about Anna Nicole Smith that Marilyn Grabowski did. And she was saying that Anna Nicole Smith was the most photogenic person she'd ever worked with. And she's like, second is Sharon Stone.
Wow.
Can you imagine having that compliment, though? Somebody saying you're the most photogenic and second is Sharon Stone.
No, I can't imagine.
Me either.
And then you ask if there's like a checklist or everything you do for pre-production or something. Mm-hmm. And they just kind of laugh at you.
Yeah. And Marilyn says it's all up here, you know, 40 years.
Yeah.
And I have a couple thoughts. Well, I mean, one, I believe it coming from her because as much as I totally respect Marilyn's work, I think she's a huge part of the quality of the Playmate pictorials and the upscale look of the Playmate pictorials and what I fell in love with of the Playmate pictorials. Like, I love her work. I do think that efficiency was not her strong suit. Just based on the stories I've heard, I think it was very much like, try it, and if it doesn't work, fuck it and scrap it, and we'll do another thing, and I'll get what I want and cost be damned. I think that was more her way of working. Whereas I'm a very efficient Capricorn, everything mapped out, lists here, lists yeah. there, lists in my head. Like, if you asked me how I did that job, I would have literal lists for you.
Yeah.
So I was like, where's your list?
Yeah.
And that's just not how everybody works.
That's weird to me, too, because I, too, work that way. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, they don't have like a list or a checklist of things that need to be done. And I yeah. feel and then they're laughing at you for that,
yeah.
like that you would think they do. I get you've been doing it for a long time. Mm-hmm. They have been doing it for a long time. But I still thought that was sort of weird.
It is weird. But I think there was just no interest in efficiency on so many different levels at Playboy. Like, one of the things I really did was streamline shit once yeah. I got in there. And so speaking of talking about somebody's strengths and weaknesses in business, I was reading Bob Iger's book, and he talks about like a lot of other powerful men he dealt with in business over the years. And mm-hmm. he'll talk about like Michael Eisner or whoever and be like, well, you know, his strength was this, but his weakness was that. And just call out a very distinct like weakness in business or a weakness with handling people. And as I'm reading this book, I'm like, I wonder if people read Bob Iger's book and think, Jesus Christ, he's fucking snarky because he's really calling people out on like their weakness in business. And I feel like for high powered men like that, that could really be an attack on the ego. But I wonder too, I wonder because he's a man, do people just read the book and accept it for what it is? Whereas when I write my book and my distinct candid views on people, especially other women, people are like, you catty fucking bitch.
Yep, it's definitely Whoa. Interpreted totally differently.
Yeah. I wonder. Like, I wonder how those comments make those men feel. And I wonder how, if anybody reading that book thought that was catty or like he was revealing too much.
Right.
It's just interesting. I'm curious.
The double standard.
Mm-hmm. So we go into Ben's office. He's one of the photo assistants. And Ben was hot. And every Playmate thought he was hot.
Yeah.
He had a crush on him. Him and Rob Hilberger in PR.
Yeah.
So there's pictures of Brittany Binger's centerfold on the wall.
Which is amazing.
Her boobs are like so perfect. Amazing. And her centerfold is funny because it's like a fake beach set. Like, it's supposed to look outdoors, but it's indoors. And there's literal fake seagulls.
Like, oh my gosh.
Hanging from a string and like seagulls in the background. And on the sand, you can see they have like some beach reads out. It's like Paris Hilton's book and one of Pam Anderson's books. And I remember they had to like Photoshop those out because like,
I
they didn't have permission
say.
To use like Paris's book.
Yeah. And Marilyn tells you here, she says one of the most important things that she tries to do is really identify with the girl. And the girls always tell her that they feel so much better when she's there on set. And I wrote, really?
Yeah, I feel like the edit left that in as like a dig kind of, or to make it seem like here's this woman who's kind of fantasizing about being that pretty girl. And I don't think that's how she meant it. I think for the most part, she did always try. I mean, clearly not always, but try to like kind of be on the girl's side in the shoots and maybe not so much the photographer's side. But it's interesting for sure.
I thought it was definitely interesting. But what I did, so I don't really see it so much with her because I guess I was the end of her wrath. But I definitely feel like that would be one of your strong suits. Like being able to identify with the girl. And
I think so 100%. I was second guess myself because like being on the spectrum, I feel like everybody thinks I'm an asshole when I don't think I'm being an asshole. So I don't know, maybe ask those girls, but I always felt like that 100%. Like I would drive them to and from work every day. I was totally like wanted to make sure they liked everything we were doing. And it was genuinely coming from a place of like, I always dreamed about being in the magazine and I loved my experiences posing for the magazine and I wanted them to have the experience that I wanted to have.
Yeah, I felt it that way.
100%. And then I tell Marilyn, I'm like, well, if we get the centerfold in one day, can we move on to the small camera? And she says, well, we'll see how good you are. And then it cuts to confessional and I say, I know I might not get the centerfold in 2 days. And I mean, we would see how wrong I was.
Yeah.
And then cut to Frankenstein episode. So we're moving on to Kendra now. We're going down to San Diego with Kendra and we see her manager. She says he's her agent, but I think he was really a manager, Matt.
Mm-hmm.
And Matt was somebody she started working with before we started the season. We've referenced this before and how we feel like maybe one of the reasons she didn't want to participate in the show as much is because people were kind of hyping her up, like you need to be out there doing other things. She was the only one allowed to have a manager. We weren't allowed to have outside representation. We had a management company, CMG, that Hef like approved, but it was like a friend of Hef's who was like kind of doing Hef's bidding and like not really getting us outside work. And also Kendra has a few things to say about this guy in her book. She says he would take her into the E offices and like demand all this stuff from E and stuff. And
oh my God.
Yeah, really weird.
Well, she refers to him as her agent. And I feel like that's sort of deceiving a little bit because I feel like if you're just watching this, you're sort of thinking maybe real estate agent.
Oh, maybe that's why she called him that.
I don't know. I think it says talent agent on the bottom, okay. But she refers to him as agent. And I feel like if I were the viewer, I might be sort of thinking, oh, this must be her real estate agent. Because why is her talent agent going to get real estate with her?
It is weird that he's in this scene. Like, why is he helping her find an investment property?
I don't know. But then when you said he was actually her manager, I think maybe they're a little bit more involved in your overall financial wealth.
I mean, I guess it depends, but a manager is usually like 360 career, but not necessarily like this just reeks of me of him wanting to be on camera.
That's what I think, too.
And also, I wanted to ask you, too, do we think that there was some editing going on? Because do we think she was looking for an investment property from the jump? Or do we think she was looking for like a backup plan property for herself? And they had her say things in confessional to make it look like a rental property. I know eventually she does rent it out, which would make sense since you're not living there. But for some reason, I had some weird memory of like her looking for a property. And we all kind of thought it was just her looking for like what her next place would be.
I remember 100% thinking at the time she was getting her own place. Mm-hmm.
Like maybe not to live in that second, but like a place she could go later.
Yes.
And it makes sense
based on a lot of the stuff she says.
Totally.
In these scenes.
And I'm not saying anything about it because I think there's anything wrong with that. Like everybody should be planning for their future after the mansion. I talked about this on my YouTube rewatch and then some people were jumping in the comments criticizing me like, Holly, why is it okay for you to buy an investment property, but it's not okay for Kendra? I'm like, I never said it wasn't okay. Like the only reason I bring this up is because if she was looking for a property for herself, the show was trying to get her to say things in confessional to turn it around and be like, no, this is a rental property, because the show very much did not want to show us doing anything that was us preparing to ever leave the mansion. That's why they didn't cover you when you did your egg retrieval.
Right.
So that's the only reason I bring it up, not because there's anything worse or better about looking for a condo for yourself or for investment. And I know eventually she did rent it out. But mm-hmm. for some reason, I just had this foggy memory of like her looking for a condo in San Diego, because that would be her like go-to safety net if she needed to move out or wanted to move out later or something.
Right. That's the gist that I got at the time, too.
And when she's walking through later, we'll see, she says a lot of things that make me think she's looking for it for herself. But
yeah,
then
this mirror makes me look skinny. Yeah. This handrail for when I come home drunk. This, like, very much implying that she's going to be living there.
In the scenes. But then when they cut to confessional, yes, she's always kind of mopping it up and saying specific things like, oh, I'm just trying to get into the renter's head, or, oh, this is an investment. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I feel like the show wanted to really put the emphasis on that, so nobody thought Kendra could be moving out for a second.
Right.
And that's the only reason I'm bringing this up, not because I think it's wrong if she's looking for an apartment or anything.
And in commentary, you ask her how many places she actually went and looked at, and she said like around 8.
Oh, wow.
That's
a lot.
See, I feel like that's hardly anything. Like, I look at 8 in a
day. In 1 day?
Hell yeah. I'm picky.
She didn't look in 8 in 1 day? Or you mean 8 total?
I think 8 places total.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, in 1 day, that's a lot. So then it cuts to your scene, and you're in the video department attic. You are Ed Hardy'd out, and you're with John Collado, who was the head of the video department, and he was always the one who had a big old video camera and would, like, record all the parties for Hef.
Yes. And he's asking me what I need, and basically what I'm talking to him about is that the editor is going to come over to the mansion to go through all of these different clips that I have, and I need him to put them on the screen downstairs, and I can't do that myself. So I have to show him all these different formats that I have and what order I want to do it in and what I should show and stuff. So,
and the reason you have to put it on the screen downstairs is for the show, right?
For the show.
Like, wouldn't need that if you were just making your own.
Right. It's for the show. I mean, the other option would be like bring them in my bedroom and like show them on my little TV, but... Mm-hmm. You know,
not as good.
I don't even think I could have done that anyway, because the clips were on so many different formats. Mm-hmm. Like, some were DVDs and some were like those thick tapes. I don't even know what they were, but beta tapes or whatever. So it had to be done by the video department to do that.
So an editor named Kevin comes up, and he was an editor from Prometheus, right? Didn't Molly tell us who he was?
Yeah, he was at Prometheus. Yeah. Well, he was at the Post Group, which is what Prometheus used. Mm-hmm. So he edited Girls Next Door as well.
And he's one of us because he shows up dressed on theme. He's wearing a shirt that says unedited.
Yes. And I'm talking about how I don't want to do the hard news because I'm not a hard news kind of girl. I want to keep it like fun stuff. And of course, I say that I want to focus on things I enjoy. Food. Amusement parks. Yeah. And they cut out the rest of it. But I remember I was talking about haunted stuff and travel and things like that, too.
Isn't it funny how much of a process it was to make a demo reel back then, or even get footage for a demo reel, when now you could just do it on your phone and do it in Splice and do it in like a day?
It's crazy.
When back then, like, to even get yourself on camera was a lot.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
So he gets there. He asks what we're doing today. And I tell him that I need to put together the demo reel for hosting. And I want his help deciding what I might need and to put it all together. And they show a montage of a bunch of my clips, and they play this really dopey, like,
to make it look, seem like you're fucking up when you're not.
And to make it look like so trivial and boring and like nobody's interested in this. Like, that music really gives you that like feeling, like, look how bimbo and dumb this is.
Right.
So that's playing. And I mean, I know the show isn't serious and they're trying to be funny and stuff like that, but I really feel like stuff like this puts it in people's head.
It's on purpose. Like,
yeah.
Choose that music on purpose. It's not like a random, oh, let's just plug the bumper in.
Yeah. You know? They want people to know she's not worthy of this. Like, she doesn't deserve this, but we're going to try and make this happen for her.
Or somebody's trying to do something they're just not equipped to do.
Yeah. And then they show Kevin Benson, the editor, saying, well, when I was watching her footage, I got a lot of good ideas. It'll be a little tricky, but we can fix anything in post.
Which I think they probably asked him to say that.
But that's such a rude dig.
Totally.
Like, at the time, I don't think I thought anything of it. Like, I was just like, but like, I do remember being embarrassed, like, maybe I shouldn't be doing this. Like, maybe I'm not good at all of this. And now looking back on it, I'm like furious. I'm like, that's so fucking rude.
Totally.
Seriously?
Especially since it's like the thing you're trying to do for a living.
Right.
You know? I always think about that when I watch like the cupcake shows and stuff where like professional bakers go on, and sometimes they're made to look so dumb. And I'm like, that kind of, I mean, maybe being on there like gives their cake shop exposure and stuff too. But I'm like, that kind of sucks if like that's what you're doing for a living. And it's like, your cake is awful.
Yeah. So I was just like watching this going, I'm so pissed, like the eating thing. And now they're trying to make me look like I'm not worthy to like do the career that I've chosen. And I'm just like over how I feel like I'm being treated on the show at this point.
Yeah. And then they cut to me. I'm talking about Tamara, the girl who's going to be posing for Playmate. She was in Mexican Playboy and I saw that issue. And I told Half, like, she should be in American Playboy. She's so pretty. It shows footage of her DJing at one of the mansion rental parties because she was a DJ. And she was managed by this guy who also managed Colleen Shannon, who was the 50th anniversary Playmate like a few years prior. And that guy was interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I remember when Colleen sent her pictures in for 50th anniversary Playmate, they wanted to use her, but like was like super protective and said that she couldn't go to the mansion. Like he was going to bring her to a nightclub to meet Half at the nightclub.
I remember. Home.
And then I've heard complaints, alleged complaints about this guy since then. So I was like, oh, he's interesting. But also I look back and I'm like, he kind of had the right idea though. I mean, when you think about what was going on during the time of 50th anniversary Playmate.
Yeah.
And how people were getting recruited and stuff. I'm like, he actually had the right idea.
He did, but I don't think he was doing it for the right reasons.
I think you're right, too.
In my opinion.
I think he wanted to make sure he got the cut and that Colleen wasn't out of his sight.
Exactly. So I don't think he was doing it for like these, like he had this like intuition or knew. I think he was doing it for his own motives.
Yeah. And Marilyn is telling me what Half is looking for in the actual centerfold picture.
And let me just cut in to say, you already know everything she's telling you.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, 100%. So it's more like for the audience. I mean, maybe she thinks I don't know.
Watching this even back then thinking Holly already knows all of these things.
But at least for the audience's sake, she points out that the centerfold has to tell a story. It's not just a random picture. You have to be able to like imagine yourself in a particular scenario with a woman. There has to be some kind of a presence of a man in the picture. And I was just thinking about how that went all out the window after we left and everything changed at Playboy and they got rid of Arnie and Steve and brought in different photographers. Not that I think either one is better or worse, but the centerfolds after a while would just be like a girl standing in front of a bunch of leaves. Like it wouldn't be the story that it used to be.
Yeah.
And maybe, you know, nobody cares about the story. Maybe guys just want to see like a naked girl. But I like the structure of an old centerfold.
That's what I was going to say.
Like, there would always be like an Easter egg in there. And
yeah, that was one of my favorite parts about looking at the pictorials. I know guys look at it for the nudity, but I was looking at it for the story and the beauty and the details and the whole theme of it.
Yeah, I like it when there's extras for those who are paying attention.
Yeah.
And I always think like how I feel like that would be considered politically incorrect now to like assume that it always has to be a man in the photo.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
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 Like I think Playboy, it used to be called Playboy Entertainment for Men. And I think they even changed that.
I think you're right.
They changed it to like Pleasure for All or something kind of.
Yeah.
And I'm like, is it wrong to have something that's marketed to just men, though?
I don't think it's wrong to have something that's marketed to just men necessarily, but maybe when it's something like that where more than just men can enjoy, you know, like it's not just for them.
Mm-hmm.
Then Marilyn asks, what are your ideas? And you're like, well, I didn't really come with ideas. I just came to learn, which I thought was a great comeback to that because I feel like
I totally did. Like I wasn't trying to. And even with the first 2 years I was there, even though I took over the job and was, you know, directing, I still felt like I was learning or trying to meet a standard pretty much that whole time. Like I didn't make changes while I was there, but I feel like maybe not as much as if I would have stayed there longer.
Right.
For example, like when the first Playmate of the Year rolled around that I had to shoot, like I just, when they said, oh, this is the one we're going to pick because she won the readers poll, I didn't think for a second that I should weigh in at all with my opinion of who Playmate of the Year should be. I was just like, oh, this is my first Playmate of the Year. I'm going to learn how to do it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, I felt like it was kind of a question to kind of put you on the spot.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so I like how you answered it because I feel like that is the honest answer. Like, I'm not coming here trying to like push all my ideas on you. And I didn't come with like this whole suitcase full of ideas that we have to start implementing right now. Mm-hmm. I came to learn from you because you guys do it well.
Yeah, I wanted to see how it was done for sure. And then Hypnotic is getting another mention. I know we've talked about Hypnotic
before.
We're just getting another mention because it was such a pretty color. I wanted to use it in the centerfold. Because I'd seen like pictures of it in our pictures before. I thought it looked really cute.
But here's where the one of the things where I feel like they're trying to make you look bad. So one of them is where they ask you if you have any ideas and you're like, oh, I don't have any. I didn't come with any. And then also you're talking about the drinks and it sort of makes it look like your main focus of this whole thing, your big thing that you're adding to this is just these like little colored drinks, and that they kind of even make it look like that's sort of your only job you do on the set.
Totally, 100%.
And I'm like, they're just trying to make her look like not qualified and focusing on the wrong shit, and like they're like, oh, good job, Holly, but they look unimpressed with the drink idea. And I'm just like, they're concentrating on that because it looks so trivial.
Exactly.
To make it look like you aren't really cut out for this. You don't get the big picture for this.
Totally. And then it shows me in the morning. I'm in a purple robe. I'm allegedly getting ready to go to the studio, but that couldn't have been what I'm getting ready for. This is a totally different day. But I love this scene because I'm standing in front of the vanity lighting, and the vanity lighting was so good. And I just love my face in the scene. And
I thought
I'm
just it looked
like,
good too.
Can I just keep that face?
I thought it
was
really good.
And I know it's common now because of like, you know, people sell the impressions vanities and stuff like that. But back then it wasn't really common to have like a big mirror with like the Hollywood lights.
Right.
And after the mansion, everywhere I moved from then on, I had one of those mirrors put in because the lighting is just so fucking good.
Yeah.
And in other continuity is for pussies news, they cut from me getting ready in my purple robe to a completely different day of me getting ready, putting on lashes. And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
And neither of them is the day I was going to the studio.
Right. Because then you arrived to the studio in totally different hair and a different look than any of the scenes you were getting ready in.
It's so funny. So next week, we're going to find out how I do. Does Bridget get a demo reel? Does Kendra get a place? Do I succeed at my job or no?
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun.
The suspense.
I wonder what Hef was feeling when I went into the studio that day, because I know he was so anti this idea at all because he didn't want to tell me no on camera, like if my centerfold flopped.
Yeah.
I wonder if he was like, ugh, this might be tricky.
I feel like at this point,
he'd maybe softened a little bit when I first started to. It's like with the golf cart thing. Like, he didn't want to buy the golf cart, but then he loved it when it showed up.
I feel like at this point, he just sort of felt like there's no harm in this. Like, it's going to be fine. And she's in good hands. There's people there that know what they're doing. So even if she doesn't, it's still going to get done.
Yeah. I think season 3 was a turning point for him, too, as far as the show, because it was the first season that he let us do an overnight. Like, it's the season he's really realizing, like, we can do a little more for this show.
Yeah.
And if we want to let the show into the studio more, then this could be a good way to do it.
Yeah.
So thanks for joining us. If you guys would like more content, check out our Patreon at patreon.com/girlsnextlevel. Check out our merch at girlsnextlevel.shop. And we'll see you guys next week.
Bye, guys.
Bye.